right, and welcome to episode 13 of Pennies in the Well. I'm your host, Saturn, and I will be your cat wrangler for the evening. Welcome to episode 13. Thank you so much for downloading the show, taking the time to listen, for joining me in a little bit of insanity or a little bit of slipping down into the well and savoring things a little more close to home. Things internal, things potentially physical, things perhaps even of the body today. For even though it is number 13, which, you know, has the temptation to get all about the number 13 and the Triske decaphobia quality of it, thought about it. I reviewed the fact that I don't do well with numbers, which is really funny because my job is actually all about numbers, but I don't do well with numerology. So we're not going to explore that or periskevi decatriophobia. Okay, I admit it. It's just fun to say that word. You got to practice it, but it's worth it. Periskevi decatriophobia. It's like phloxenosinhilipilification, which is one word and means something like the estimation of something is worthless. Ha ha ha. Phloxenosinhilipilification. What a great word, huh? Now that is crazy, over big word, and yeah, scary. Periskevi decatriophobias are the people who, or periskevi decatriophobia is fear of Friday the 13th, and Triske decaphobia is fear of the number 13. So that little language lesson aside, let's get into the actual episode. So first off, I want to send out a little podkin love to the infinite and beyond with Chris Oropello for playing my promo. Very much thank you. And a little podkin out to the usuals, you know, the Wigglian Way and Media Astrak, Terra, Standing Stone and Garden Gate. Great pod shows? Podcasts. All of them. Give them a listen. I've been catching up on my Infinite and Beyond. I can now officially say I am fully caught up, which means that I'm moving into my next little obsession, which might be Witch's Brouhaha, or I might finish my catching up on Inciting a Riot. Hard to tell at this point, but I keep listening, and I'm really glad that you do too. Podkin love out there, and love out to the listeners, and let's get into some... Well, you could almost call it housekeeping. First off, just a quick reminder that there is still a contest on in my little world for a copy of the Tricky Pixie CD, Mythcreants, signed by none other than S.J. Tucker and Betsy Tinney. So I'm going to be raffling that off towards the end of August, about August 20th or 26th, whatever episode happens to come out closest to that. So you've still got about a month to get in your name for the contest, and in order to be considered, please send me a short statement, three words, paragraph, somewhere in between. You might want to stop short of an actual essay, though. That might get a bit much. But anything short or long is welcome on your experience of the divine. So send that to me along with your name, obviously your email address, and your name goes into the hat for the draw. Plus, I want to take... what you say, and well, I guess you could say build an episode around it, but take the what you've shared and discuss it on the episode where I do the drawing. So I really look forward to hearing from more of the listeners of what your experience of the divine is, and I've loved what I've received so far. To the people who sent me things, thank you so much. It's very much appreciated. I also wanted to let you know, I got an email yesterday, actually, from Inanna Gabriel. She is one of the co-founders or co-owners, I'm not sure, of Misanthrope Press. And they are doing, well, they're doing a call-out, actually, for submissions for an anthology that they're doing. Let me read what she's written. That'll come out slightly more coherent. So the book is going to be entitled, that they're going to publish, Etched Offerings, Voices from the Cauldron of Story. They'll be open for submission starting September 1st and going through October 31st with a planned publication in spring 2011. They're taking short stories only, so no poetry or personal essays. The full guidelines, including the type of things they are and aren't looking for, are on their website, which is www.misanthropepress.com. That's www.misanthropress.com. The page for Etched Offerings, the book that they're going to be doing, can be found under either the submissions link at the top or the project announcements link on the right. So it's a short overview. I have read through the guidelines. I think it said the item should be somewhere between 1,500 and 7,000 words. And pagan related is good. Fantasy horror quality is nice. None of these were set in stone, as I recall. But basically, you know, it should have something pagan related in it, if I recall correctly, or at least thematically resonate with pagans. And certainly nothing that bashes pagans. That will probably get your submission kicked right on out. So for all you authors out there, like me, take a look at it. Nice little chance to get published. It looks like it's a great thing that they're doing. So check out their website, check out the guidelines, and I'll put, of course, the web address on the show notes. Excuse me for a moment. Tonight, episode 13 is brought to you by Hot Carnation Hot Chocolate, the adult way with Grand Marnier. No better way to wake up on a camping trip than with hot chocolate with Grand Marnier. Oh yeah, baby. Now that tastes good. Taste. What taste? What do we use to taste? Why? I do believe it's our tongue that tastes. And our brain, there's receptors in there that take the information from our tongue and the information that travels up happy little nerve endings and such and translates that to wonderful flavors. Such wonderful things that come from the physical body. Are you catching my theme here? You get a little sense that we might be talking things related to the body today? I thought you did. So today is, yes, all about body. In particular, though, we're going to be talking about yoga. And why are we going to talk about yoga? Why was this the particular theme that expressed itself in episode 13? Why? Because two nights ago, Tyson from Invisible House, one of the two gentlemen who did the episodes 3, 4, and 5 with me on the Book of the Law, Book of the Law being written by Crowley, which reminds me, my God, I've completely forgot. Thank you very much to Chris Arpello, who pointed out that in my last non-saney episode, I referred to the Book of the Law. That I was reading from the Book of the Law is what I said. I meant the Book of Lies. So I was reading, I believe it was chapter 11 from the Book of Lies, not the Book of Law. So that is my erratum or errata, I should say, from episode 11. For episode 13, we're not reading from any of those books. But Tyson was here a couple nights ago. We were having some great discussions and ended up talking about yoga, which he was very kind, and as we got more into things, allowed me to pull out the microphone, shove it under his nose, and make him go back to kind of the start of our conversation on yoga. So what you're going to be hearing tonight is primarily that interview. A little intro from me first, some breaks, some musics, then the interview, another little break, and I'm going to finish up the show talking with the first of a series of segments on the chakras. So, I should probably call that The Body Divine. Isn't that a great segment name? Yes, I think so. I think that's a winner. The Body Divine. That'll be the closing segment. And in the Body Divine segment today, we'll be talking about the root chakra. So that is the overview for the show. And with no further ado, here we go. My personal experience with yoga. Well, I've actually been doing yoga. You'll understand what I mean when you hear the interview. In a more Californian style, I'll let Tyson explain it in his wonderful way in the interview, but very basic Hatha style yoga, because I started doing it when I was doing a lot of aerobics classes and then got into it through my gym. That wasn't the first time I did yoga. God only knows. You know, when you start hitting 40 and age sneaks up on you and you reflect back and go, yeah, I've done a lot of yoga. I mean, a lot of yoga. But do I remember when I started doing yoga? No, not a clue when. I remember when I started doing karate. I don't remember yoga. It just kind of snuck in there. Wait, coming to me. I think I was in university and taking the strangest course ever. Okay, I'm going to take this digression because it was a really cool course. I took a course on, it was at SFU, and I'm trying to remember the exact name of it. Oh yeah, Altered States of Consciousness. That's right. I took a 5-credit university course on Altered States of Consciousness. Oh my God, fabulous. They don't offer it anymore. I rather wish I did. I bet the guy who taught it has subsequently retired. Anyhow, this was at Simon Fraser University. For those who live locally, it's on the top of a mini mountain. You can't really call it a full mountain when you imagine most mountains being, you know, craggy at the top with a whole ton of snow kind of covering them 3/4 of the year at least, which isn't the case with Burnaby Mountain that is the home of this university. So anyhow, it mildly relates for unimportant reasons where it is. So this course was whacked. It was crazy. I mean, we talked about meditation. We talked about drugs. He played some videos on cults. He was writing a book at the time about, what was it? Alice from Alice in Wonderland ended up in... No, she was lost in Wonderland, and Mr. Toad from, you know, Wind in the Willows had to go rescue and help her. Something along those lines. I still remember at least the two books that were involved. And he would read to us, every class, a chapter or two from his book. That was part of our class time. The 3-hour lecture, those were the topics, for instance, that were in it. And then we would do a 2-hour lab. Now, I was taking this class in the summer, which was perfect. And we would go out by the water tower, which also has a bunch of other stuff by it. But anyway, big green field surrounded by trees by this big ass water tower up at the top of Burnaby Mountain. And we actually brought towels with us each class. And we would go out into this field in the sun, lie down. We did past life regressions. We did... all kinds of meditative things. We also did sun salutation. That was the very first time I ever did any yoga. And that was certainly the first time that I did sun salutations. So that was my intro to yoga. And then I think most of the subsequent experiences had a lot to do with exercise classes. And I took some Kundalini yoga, which was fabulous, I have to say, years ago. Not as many years ago as when I first took yoga classes, but still a good number. Nowadays, now that I'm getting older and my body's getting cranky, very, 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 very cranky. Yes, we have arguments periodically. I know I'm supposed to be integrating into my body, but you know, sometimes you just have to get a little frustrated with things. So what my world, I was going to say entails, but it actually requires for the most part that I do yoga on a daily basis. And I incorporated this daily practice, and I do it first thing in the morning. I get up, I do the sun salutation, you know, through twice, so it's both sides. And then I do a bunch more stretches, and then I do the Star Ruby. I used to do the LBRP, very equivalent little, their equivalent rituals to kind of protect and cleanse kind of deal. It's a great way to start the day. So the reason that this has worked out, because I am not a morning person, not even remotely. Oh dear God, just shoot me. Mornings. Oh, evil. But doing this in the morning was absolutely necessary because it turns out that I have a finicky back. And if I don't stretch every day, or basically every day, my back decides to go, fuck you. Yes, in that very cute, friendly, I'm adorable, look at me, fuck you kind of way. Which, you know, that's nice and all, but it's not fun. It's downright painful. So what I had the best type of reinforcement for this daily practice ever, which was, if I don't do it, bad things happen, which really, really, really encourages you to do the right thing. So that's been my own personal practice with yoga, typically. I've been tempted to explore particular styles of yoga, but honestly haven't found the time and inclination. When I had time and money to do such things and a body that was capable and willing of doing them, that's when I was doing dance as I think probably all of you know, my left knee is more than a little shot at the moment, so no exercise for me. But the yoga continues. In fact, the yoga helps keeping the muscles limber enough around the knee that it doesn't actually lock up, but strong enough that it helps to support it. So yeah, it's not the best way of saying that yay, yoga is great, but you can say it all you want. It's until you get into the particulars of it and how people experience it that you start to go, okay, yeah, I can see why it is that that's great. Ah, from a writer's point of view, hearkening back to Inanna and their pagan fiction anthology that they're putting out, this would be an example of showing, not telling. Because I can tell you that yoga is great, but if I show you the effects that I've had from it and how great it has actually been in my life, it has a much more direct experience. So showing, not telling, works not just in writing, but in a wonderful and variety of other ways. So that is going to end, I think, our intro for this first section, which I thought was going to be short, but I should have known better. So this is going to be a long episode. I'd say my apologies, except as you know, that's just kind of the way things roll. Lately, I've been trying to keep my episodes down a little because I personally kind of like episodes that are in the hour range. I find 2 hours, I just feel overwhelmed with the amount of time to listen to things. But that's my own personal issues coming through. So I'm going to be one of those people probably with a close to 2 hour episode today, and I hope you enjoy. So we're going to take a bit of a break and listen to some Michelle Mays, and I don't actually have her website handy because I'm an idiot, so I'll tell you that when I come back. But we are going to listen to first Earth My Body from Fire Leap, followed by Snake Woman / Spirit something. Oh my god, my handwriting is horrid. If you only knew the stuff that I do to myself to make myself crazy. We'll just call it Snake Woman. It's also from Fire Leap. And I will have the website when we come back. It'll also be in the show notes. I just thought that these would be a couple of nice songs. Kind of, you know, they're definitely pagan, but related into the body more. So that's what you're going to hear. I hope you enjoy, and I will see you on the other side for the interview with Tyson.
Fire my spirit, earth my body.
welcome back to episode 13 of Pennies in the Well. I'm not sure what it says about me that I have a variety of things that I would already like to point out that I said wrong or slightly off in the first segment, but couldn't find a decent way of editing them out, so now I have to explain my own mistakes so right off the top. I suppose there's a good lesson than that. You know, there's no point in trying to sweep mistakes under the rug or hide them or deny them. Own up, fess up, get them out there, deal with them, move right along. It's a much healthier attitude. You feel better about it in the long run. Nothing building up inside and making you feel all tense and bad or anything like that. So you could call this a life lesson. Yes, yes, you could. So first off, let me remind you that to send in those contest submissions, to send them to penniesinthewell@gmail.com. You could also leave them as a comment on the website, penniesinthewell.com. As a comment, that's fine too, but please feel free. Email penniesinthewell@gmail.com. Can't believe I forgot that part. Michelle Mays, her website address is michellemays.com. So that's michellemays.com. And the second song that was played is called Snake Woman / Spiral of Life. So it's amazing how you can mistake your own handwriting when you're, well, scribbling. I'd like to say that I was in a rush when I wrote it down and that's why it's so bad, but alas, no, that's just the way my handwriting is. And then finally, because I don't want to get shot, I had said that the LBRP and the Star Ruby are equivalent. I think that I would be shot if I left that statement in there. Let me just say that they are related and they in a kind of familial way and similar in effect and ever so slightly similar in style. Let me just put it that way. They have similar intentions. Hopefully that will be acceptable to the people who are much more involved in the traditions that use them regularly rather than someone like me who kind of uses them because they work and doesn't do the rest of the tradition that is related to those rituals. Anyhow, I have now fessed up to the things that I have said wrong or messed up or just plain old forgot. From this, let's move on into the interview. I really hope you enjoy, and I will be back on the other side of the interview. Hello, and welcome, and merry meet, and all that crazy jazz. Yes, this is Saturn, and I am sitting on my balcony, and twilight is descending, and sitting across the table from me is one Tyson, of the Invisible House, www.invisiblehouse.org. Ha! He's making squeaky evil faces at me right now, going, why would she do that to me? Why would she say it that way? Because I would, because I'm mean. Anyhow, we've been hanging out, we've been chatting and talking, and through the strange synchronicities of our worlds, we have come to the realization that a lovely chat on yoga just might be the thing to do. Would you like to say hi?
Hi.
He looks a little tortured.
No.
A tad. No? Oh, now I'm getting pouting. Anyway, we started talking.
I'm so vilified.
Oh, vilified my ass. And you know what? I can say that because I have an explicit rating on the podcast.
Ooh.
Swearing's allowed.
Well, in that case.
yeah, I'm going to move it closer to you. I have to make sure you can be heard. So we were talking... We started talking earlier about yoga and how it keeps coming up, and he was at a party recently where a lovely lady came up, asked him about yoga, and he said something about, well, are you talking real yoga or California yoga?
Something like that.
Hey, come on, how much of a lead-in do you want here?
I wasn't expecting a lead-in at all. Oh. I was going to start off something like, well, so there I was at this party.
All right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So there you were at this party.
So there I was at this party. And one conversation led to another. And we were talking about, we were talking about shoulder injuries and various injuries just through the course of the wild adventures of living. And,
and let's just say for the record that if in doubt, let the wasp sting you.
Great.
That's we won't just give awesome. Any backstory.
Your imaginations are going to run wild with that, and so much for my pride.
Let the wasp sting you. How does that kill your pride?
So anyways, the comment came up, you know, thank goodness for yoga, because if I didn't have that flexibility, the injury probably would have been, you know, 5 times more grievous. At which point, Redhead pokes around the corner and says, yoga? Did you say yoga? And I said, yeah, but real yoga, not that California bull crap. She goes, what do you mean? What's the difference? At which point the guy I was talking to saved my ass, because my explanation in that kind of situation is generally about 5 minutes and doesn't end up very happy. But he coined it as best as I've ever heard it. He said, California yoga is the practice of learning how to shit your avocado comfortably. As opposed to real yoga, which is learning to master your mind and your breathing and your body to surmount those obstacles and limitations that are normally attributed to us as humans.
No, that's quite a mouthful.
And yet it's actually the short version.
I can imagine.
Basically, I mean, yoga ends up coming up a lot in conversations when talking about, at least my magical practice, if not other people's magical practices.
Well, that's what I find interesting in the your magical practice, having a hermetic base and a thelemic base, does very explicitly draw upon yoga. It's part of your grade system, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
From a Wiccan perspective and that more general pagan perspective, even having done some druidic, a little asatru, stuff like that, no yoga.
Which is dreadfully sad.
Yes. I just want to say for the record, I do yoga. I don't necessarily do yoga to the extent that you do, but I am not yoga free. I'm not yoga deficient.
I've had my lazy moments where the yoga slips. It happens. We're human. Personally, I believe that yoga is an essential part to any kind of magical or mystical practice. I guess to break it down to look at yoga in, I don't know, the question's been asked to me, I guess, a whole bunch of times as to, you know, well, what kind of yoga do you practice other than real yoga? You know, what is real yoga?
Came out of a box that had a yogi on the front.
Yeah, but I mean, even today, the traditional practice of yoga has turned into a dogmatic practice in India. And the lessons have more or less been lost, or at least corrupted, and less value is actually gleaned from the practices. So the closest that I've ever come to successfully describing the yoga that I practice would be bare bones yoga, stripped of any dogmatic balderdash, hooey dooey, whatever you want to call it. Basically, take the practice for what it is, practice it, and try to glean what lesson is actually being learned in this practice.
Now let's get a little practical there. So let's take a relatively simple stance, like warrior, downward dog, I don't know, pick one. Do you even know the terms of the rest of our little world? Those of us who suffer California yoga, you know, yoga light.
It's not just about...
I know it's not just about position, but let's take a position, isn't it?
Okay, let's take the lotus position. It's probably the one that everybody's absolutely familiar with.
Ow.
Exactly. Ow. It's probably the best description.
Those who aren't familiar with what it looks like.
Basically, you are crossing your legs in such a bendy-legged fashion that...
Say your right foot is resting on top of your left thigh and knee, and your left foot is resting on top of your right thigh and knee.
That's the way it looks like when I'm doing it. The actual yogis will have their heels in the crooks of their hips.
Yeah, let's stick to the fact that most of us don't do that kind of yoga, and what you can expect is probably more thigh and knee, but if you can get to the crook of your thigh to hip,
then it attests to your flexibility. Which is one of the benefits of yoga.
True.
To look at the lotus position. Yes, it is supposed to be a painful position.
It's supposed to be painful?
Yes.
Oh, that's comforting.
At least at first.
You did not say that in yoga class. Oh, this shouldn't hurt. It should stretch, but never hurt.
Well, stretching hurts until you're stretched long enough that it doesn't hurt anymore.
You mean when you've gone numb and...
Funny enough, but we'll get back to that. the constant practice of yogic positions do increase the flexibility. And the flexibility is flexibility in every sense of the word. It's an adaptability. It means you can bend and twist and get out of scrapes that you otherwise would have been nailed full on in the head because, you know, you just bent backwards and did like an air limbo. And whatever it was that was flying at your head missed you. But, I mean, you got to be pretty much really expert at that kind of thing in order to get there. But the point is, it hurts. And that therein lies the first lesson. Because yoga isn't about being able to stretch and bend your legs over the back of your head and pretzel yourself until you look funny for everybody else's amusement. Yes, yes. It's about the discipline. Yeah. And the discipline, I'll only say it 3 more times in the next 5 minutes, but that is the key that everybody needs in order to be a successful practitioner at magic.
Yes.
You have to be able to divest yourself from your outworlder surroundings.
He's just pointing at me. I'm not sure if that was supposed to be a please cut that out because I said it wrong.
Your day-to-day surroundings, the stresses of your life, those distractions that are immediate in your vicinity, the cat's tail tickling by your nose when you're laying down on the ground, these are distractions that are not conducive to actually accomplishing your goals when you're doing magic. So the pain that you're feeling when you're initially in the lotus position, you get to a point where you reach that threshold. And the longer you hold back the scream of agony, the longer you hold back the scream of agony. Eventually, your mind plateaus above the pain and it blocks off your body. Your body is suddenly dulled, it's in the background, it is no longer all its little quirks and twinges and muscle spasms and everything like that, they're gone. And there's just you and your consciousness. That's the headspace that you're looking for when you're going to be getting into any kind of serious magic, when you need to accomplish a goal and really attain that sort of thing. No, don't get me wrong. There's easier ways to do it.
I was going to say, you don't have to suffer intense agony in order to reach that headspace.
No, but being able to rise above
yes.
those obstacles is a great lesson. But the flexibility aspect is merely one branch of the yoga.
Mm-hmm.
Or not even, it's a phase of the one branch, Hatha yoga. Breathing is probably the most important all the way through.
That's when they focus on that prana yoga?
Pranayama. Yeah, the control of breath. Asana yama is the control of posture. It is one of the forms.
Yeah.
The breathing actually is a really, really good way to get past the pain. By focusing on the breath and by regulating your breath, you can allow the muscles and the body rhythm, the energy rhythm, to actually flow. I'm making hand motions up and down my body as I'm saying this, to regulate. I mean, we can control every aspect of ourselves. We can turn on and off nerves. I mean, they're signals. Somebody pokes you in the hand with a needle, you get a signal in your brain that tells you just got poked.
Yeah, but that's really easy for you to say, that we can just turn it off, but it's not easy to do.
It takes practice. But anything, I mean, practice makes pretty good. I mean, you have to do things regularly before you can actually do them well.
I feel a bit failed then on that one because I spent 11 months getting tattooed and I never got to the point where I could simply sit there and not feel agonizing pain. I still sat there. I still did it. I still let it kind of wash through and pass me. But at no point was I unaware of the serious owie factor.
Fair enough. But did you get up out of the chair and like
never once.
Smoke the tattooist while he was trying to needle you or?
And no, never once. My body didn't even get tense unless I was PMSing. By the way, girls, never, ever, ever, ever get tattooed when you're PMSing. No, bad, bad pain, bad, bad pain. Actually, and I still didn't get out of the chair. He kicked me out because he couldn't take the agony I was in. But I didn't get out of the chair.
But that's the control I'm talking
and
about.
And the body stayed relaxed. So
you can sit there and stream tears. I mean, just sitting in the lotus position, back to the lotus, tears were a normal thing for me. I remember when I was barely getting into the yoga, and we were showing a bunch of newbies what it, you know, how what it looked like to have somebody who is in control of himself so that not a flicker of pain is showing on his face. And this was surprise to me. This was surprise to me because I was like totally unprepared. Yeah. I was like, hey, Tyson, you're going to be the example today. Please assume the lotus position. I glared at him. And he was serious. He was serious. So I assumed it. I knew what he was trying to do. It was a test to me. It was a test to my manhood, my control. And I was going to be damned if all these newbies were going to see me cry. So I assumed the position.
Well, doesn't that just sound wrong?
I grabbed my ankles. I pulled them up. And I sat there and I took it. And
you still sounds really naughty.
Well, the analogy is apt, because while nothing actually penetrated, it probably would have been easier that way. But I tell you, not a bead of sweat on my forehead, not a twinge in my cheek or my tick in my eye. I held that position until he told me to get out, and then I almost couldn't. My body had locked into that yogic rigidity.
Yeah. Okay, I got a question for you. Now, I knew what I was getting out of the tattoo. There was the commitment factor of, I'm halfway done, there's no point stopping now, you can't walk around with a half of a back tattoo. I'd started it, I had to finish it, get it done as soon as possible. There was a reason to sit through it and not wimp out.
What kept me going?
What kept you going? And what could possibly appeal? Why would people listening to this go, oh yeah, yoga does sound good. Right now, yoga does not sound good. Yoga sounds wrong. Because a little flexibility for streaming tears of pain just doesn't sound like an even balance.
It wasn't just the asana, though. It wasn't just the hatha yoga that I was doing. I was also introduced to various other forms of yoga, such as, hatha yoga was your breathing and your pratyahara and your dharana, which is your focus, and your dhyana, which is your vision of God. And your samadhi, which is the ultimate end of it, which is your union with God. Those are all things that you're going to hear in the California yoga, although nobody but, and possibly not even the yogi who's instructing, has ever attained any of that. Because you actually need to have some sort of cognizance and control factor in order to be able to, you know, resist that kind of influence on your mind.
Resist which influence on your mind? You lost me slightly.
The image of the universe, the cosmic, all, even a complete and innate union with an object that you've been focusing on, mm-hmm. can be drastically overwhelming and bedazzling. When you are searching for your inner self, when you actually find it, mm-hmm. if you're not prepared and have control factors and be able to know that, you know, this is my thought, this is not my thought, this is my feeling, this is not my feeling. If you don't have that, then you get lost in the bliss of it all.
Well, I wonder if people ever get also terrified. I mean, if you're not ready to meet yourself, meeting yourself can be a truly frightening experience for some people.
Oh,
actually,
yeah.
I think for most people, until you've actually worked through some things and gotten
every new experience. The mind will completely balk. It'll fight you every step of the way. And yoga is no exception to the rule. You can sit there and you can focus on a candle flame, and which is also a yogic practice for specifically dharana. And your mind will wander. It'll get distracted by every sound here and there.
Now that I think we've all done.
Oh yeah.
I think we've all experienced that mind wandering.
But eventually, I mean, you can count the times you got distracted and be distracted by how many times you've counted. And it's a never ending circle. But the more you practice, the better you get at it. And eventually, and often more quickly than you'd think, you move past it, and suddenly you have that union where it's just you and the candle flame. Or just you and your mind, or just you and that object of your focus. So, again, it all comes down to practice and endurance. You build up endurance by doing it. And I think I realized that with the yoga. Either it may have begun as a dare. Oh, you don't have the tenacity to keep on. You don't have the kahunas to assume this position. Control. You're all over the place. You know what is this control that you speak of? You're not all that. So to prove that I was all that, I kept at it. That would be a nails on a chalkboard of a cat trying to climb metal.
My nerves are fine. Oh, come on. He fell off a railing inside. One of these days, you better not fall off this railing.
Here. He'll only do it once.
Oh, cheerful.
Anyways, no, it is a commitment. Yoga, it's not a game. It's not something you do on weekends. And it does have its rewards. And when you start getting that, making that headway, when you start having those successes, you realize that, you know, that pain sucked, but it really was worth it because it was a structured way to get the end results.
Now, is there more than just the pain? I mean, there is more than just the pain, right? It's not just pain of a position that leads you, because some of those positions are not painful.
No, many of them aren't. The maintaining of any position. If you tried to...
Takes concentration and focus and breathing and...
Actually, sometimes that's even counteractive.
My favorite was the first time I ever truly relaxed into a position. And it wasn't just a lying flat on the ground position, but, you know, some standing position. And I actually fully relaxed into it where my body wasn't trying to hold into that spot. But I actually relaxed and still held the position, but without forcing it. I don't know if that made sense, but it was a wonderful releasing feeling that I didn't have to strongly control the position in order for it actually worked better without it.
Well, I remember making a fool of a guy at work.
You?
He was a muscle-bound weightlifter and very proud of himself, you know, being able to, you know, bench press this much, bench press that much. And I'm like, you know what? Here's a true test of just how strong you are. I said, hold your hand out in front of you. Just straight out in front of you. And I held my hand out straight out in front of him, showing what I meant.
And I
was talking to him, and I go, so seriously, how long can you hold your hand up there? He goes, it's not even a weight attached to it. I can hold it up forever. But after about 45 seconds, he started to, you know, his hand started to shake a little bit. And after about a minute, beads of sweat forming on his forehead. And sure enough, it wasn't 2 minutes, and his hand dropped in absolute exhaustion. He couldn't hold it up in front of him anymore. This muscle-bound weightlifter with no self-discipline. And the trick was not thinking about it. We do it all the time. We carry our groceries with our arms bent at the elbows so that the bags don't hit the ground. We carry those suckers for blocks as we're trying to find where we parked our car. You know, and you don't think about it. You know, you're carrying something in your arms, or you're standing at a concert. I mean,
well, or even just unloading from camping. And yeah, I'm thinking about it, but I'm also thinking I have to get the shit back up to my apartment.
And you can
put I'm going to make it.
And you can push yourself beyond what would normally be your limitations because you're looking at the end result and not what you're actually doing at the moment. You're not distracting yourself with those thoughts of this should hurt. And as soon as you do that, like you say, you relax into the position. You relax into the motion, the tantra of it. Another good way to focus the mind is mantra.
That would be my neighbors moving. Yes, my neighbors are actually literally moving. This might get noisy, people. We're sorry, but it's lovely out. So we're sitting on the balcony. Screw you, world.
But yeah, so this bare bones yoga is
you were saying mantra.
I was, but mantra is just the vocal. It's the vocal repetition which distracts your conscious mind from those things that would distract it. Mantra,
it distracts your conscious mind from the things that would distract it?
Exactly.
Come on, it's a lovely definition. It's a funny definition.
The ultimate truths contain their contradictions within them.
Yes. Oh, it made perfect sense. I'm not arguing that. It's just saying it. I'm sorry. I derailed you. Please continue.
That's okay. Mantra serves the same purpose that the Gregorian monks used to whip themselves with flails until they bled. the repetition of it distracted them from, you know, the pain, took away all their temptations, and they were left with nothing but their minds.
This would be the perfect clip or moment to put in the clip of Unana su domine.
Tonk.
Ona heis requiem.
Tonk. Monty Python at its finest.
Oh, truly is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But no, you take the lessons from the yoga. The prana, the breathing, is not the act of breathing. It is the breath of life. And the breath is what you're focusing on. Not the inhalation of the breath and the exhalation of the breath.
I mean, sorry, what? You don't focus on the inhalation and the exhalation?
No, you're just doing that. It's the breath itself.
Okay, I'm going to need a little bit more on that one. You know, I've been Californiaized with my yoga for a long time here.
The rhythm is just something to fall into. Another thing that can distract you. I don't know. So
you're flowing with the breath. You're not focusing on whether it's inhaling or exhaling or how long or anything like that?
No. It doesn't matter whether you're doing four in, holding for three, and then four out or anything like that. I mean, setting the patterns and rhythms is more of a psychological effect than anything immediately useful to the meditation itself.
Okay.
The best breathing exercise is just a rhythmic in and out. You can do it slowly, you can do it fast. Each has a different reaction that the body...
Wow, you are giving me a flashback, a tortured flashback to elementary school and having to run a ridiculously long period of time around and around and around a track. And all I did for that entire time was in, out, in, out, because it's the only thing that kept me going.
The breath itself is full of energy. Well, we're completely surrounded. We are energy.
Yeah.
It gives you something to actually look at. And behind the breath,
breath gives you something to look at?
In your mind's eye.
Okay.
Yes.
I don't know why this one's so persnickety for me. I don't.
It's okay. It does eventually actually take on a tangibility of its own. And the reason, or one of the benefits of actually focusing on the breath itself and not the actual breathing, is...
Focus on your breathing. Or breath itself, not the actual breathing, did you say?
I was just looking at this wonderful discus ashtray.
No. I made that in elementary school. I know. Damn it that there's a world around us and we haven't shut it out. Come on,
the breath is a gateway to alternate planes. And behind the breath which is a tangible thing of energy.
Okay.
Behind the breath is a wellspring of energy. It is the no thing. It is the in-between thing. It is the source of everything that is. And by tapping into that, which you can usually do at either the peak or either peak of the actual breath.
Yeah.
When you finish breathing in or just about to breathe out, you're not holding your breath, but there's a transition moment.
Yes.
And if you can catch that transition moment, you can see through that little hole and find infinite power. Infinite.
Phenomenal cosmic power.
In a little bitty hole. If you can tap into that, then you have a huge advantage over any other magician or witch or shaman or whatever it is. And many of them get there without ever putting a name to it or anything like that. They probably wouldn't even realize how they do it if you were to ask them to think about it. But the breath is what carries us.
Mm-hmm.
It's what we move on. It's what we exist on. It really is.
You stop, you die. You're done.
Not necessarily.
Completely stop.
Well, I don't know. Ask the yogi who hasn't been breathing, eating, sleeping, shitting, or anything for 8 months. But that's
my bad.
There's freaks out there. What can I say? They call themselves Sufis, but they can do things that even the masters over on the West Side can only dream of. But I suppose practice makes pretty good. It really does come down to a matter of perspective.
Yeah.
I mean, children can do things that we adults never ever can anymore because they don't realize that they can't. And magic is really much the same way.
Or that they'll fall.
Well, you know.
Which is part of the camp.
Yeah. They're too worried about consequences to do anything.
Full steam ahead and damn the consequences.
Absolutely. But back to yoga.
Oh, right.
Basically, there's multiple practices of it. And it wasn't just the hatha yoga that was appealing. There was the raja yoga, which was purely, it was energy work.
Mm-hmm.
Where it was the gathering and the holding of energy. Drawing it into your hands, using the breath as the medium. You bring it into your hands and hold it there until your fingers swelled up like fat sausages and they went tingly and numb with this crackling sensation of energy.
Mm-hmm.
And then to direct it or to have a constant push of the energy. And we used to have fun with energy battles where we would like just basically each throw energy at each other, not trying to hurt or anything, just trying to like push.
Yeah.
And it builds a stamina and a regularity, and it's really good for building that strength.
Oh, energy games are just fun, period.
But it was like Raja Yoga was all about the endurance.
Yeah.
To where the physical body begins to fail, your energy body or your energy manipulation maintains what needs to be done.
Mm.
So, you know, you're hanging off the edge of a cliff and your fingers are so tired that they're about to give off on you. You give that extra energy because, I mean, to not, silly, but to not is to fall. Yeah. And there are some occasions in our life where failure is not an option. And Raja Yoga is a great teacher of that. There's Gana Yoga, which is the healing touch. And again, it's using the focus and the energy and the lack of distraction, which are gained in Hatha Yoga, to actually conducive to healing. And it's right akin to Reiki and other such forms of like quantum touch and other forms of energy healing. What's another kind of, yes. And the ultimate climax of all the yogas and the whole purpose that they all serve to focus towards is Bhakti Yoga. Bhakti Yoga is the devotional yoga where you take all of your energy and all of your strength and all of your being and all of your endurance and everything that you are and everything that you were and everything that you want to be or will be, and you give it to something else. That kind of dedication is transformative, to say the least. It changes, it doesn't change who you are, it changes your perspective on who you are.
Mm.
And you realize aspects about yourself that very, very few individuals ever get around to doing. And having that self-awareness and your connection to your object of focus or the universe in general gives you an ability that you won't otherwise have. And quite honestly, I don't know of any other practices that will bring you to that, not even in Buddhism.
Hmm.
So
that is your ultimate attainable goal.
It brings you to
have that moment. I mean, that would be the reason to go through, or one of the reasons to go through all of the rest of it.
Yes, definitely. That is probably one of the biggest landmarks. I mean, all those practices that we've been doing up to that point, all your hatha yoga and everything else, all leads up to the ability to give of that essence without losing anything.
I think that point is very important, the without losing anything. Just as you were saying earlier about not getting lost in, I think we were recording then.
In the distraction?
Not getting lost when you meet up with yourself and when combine yourself with the outer world. The union?
Oh, yes, that was, we were not recording at that point.
Ah, damn.
That was the upstairs conversation.
Oh, I was down here. Sorry, guys. But we were talking about the union of, I guess, self to the outer world is another way to put it. And you don't want to get...
We were talking about part of it, where you don't want to get mired down by your beatific vision or your vision of sorrow or any of those.
But you also don't want to get lost in who you are.
No, you...
Right, like all of these things combined, like if you're not prepared for that moment, basically, on a variety of levels, that it's not to just try and go, okay, tomorrow I'm going to dedicate myself and not in the
transcendentalism is generally not healthy.
You know, here, let me just give all that I am to the world at large.
And you have spontaneous combustion. Yeah.
The point I wanted to make was just that, you know, don't rush out. Hey, kids, don't try this at home until you've gone through the rest of it.
Yeah, no. That's the problem with California yoga, is because all of these are, as you're going through them, you learn things about yourself. You learn all the crafty little things that your mind is able to do to you to try to distract you, to try to reject what it is that you're trying to force upon your mind, because your mind doesn't like anything new, and it will fight you tooth and nail. It'll meditations where you get distracted, or meditations where you have periods where you just fall asleep instantly every time you try to meditate, because your mind doesn't, it knows where you're going. It doesn't want you to go there because it scares me.
I've been through that one and it's really fucking annoying.
But you know, you push yourself to that threshold time and again.
Yeah.
And eventually your mind is like, okay, well, I'm familiar with this. And
and you're not going to stop.
And its resistance falters.
Yeah.
It's your will versus your mind. And that is the tenacity that you're learning in Raja Yoga, in Hatha Yoga, in the control of your posture. And I am the master of my body. I am the master of my mind. I am the master of my spirit. I am indomitable.
Who am I? What is I?
Now, that depends on which I. I the ego or I the selfless?
The I that you were just talking about. I am in control of my body. I am the master of my mind. I am the master of my spirit. So by definition, you are not your body. You are not your mind. You are not your spirit. It makes me wonder what your definition of I or self
is. That would be our essence, our incarnate essence, which is, I suppose, if you really want to get down to it, a combination of our corporeal nature, some people call it the soul, our immortal spirit, and we are the spirit. The I is ultimately the spirit. And we are both, it's veiled until we touch it. So it kind of leads us to where we're going. It's the thing that makes us realize, oh, hey, open doorway, let's go. Or...
Yeah, I think it matches where it melds relatively well with how I conceptualize self, which I talked about in the first, I think the second and fifth, no wait, second? Sixth episodes. You know, those 3, 4, 5 ones in the middle, it was all about you guys and the Book of the Law thing, whatever that was.
Yeah.
You know, it's been ages ago. I forgot all about it now. You thought about the death.
It's more than your conscious ego. It's not the one who wakes up in the morning, takes a shower, and goes to work. It's
informed by the fact that you are corporeal. It is informed by the spirit that you are. I'm with you. I'm not explaining well today. You are on the explaining roll. It's awesome. I'm mildly distracted, but I'm okay with that.
I hope so.
No, trust me.
It's okay. Good. Basically, to have that realization of who and what you are, all your good qualities, all your bad qualities, they are all part of you. And you may be able to alter them here and there along the way, dominate them, or get rid of them altogether down the road. You have to be aware of them before you can even talk to them.
Yes.
And once you're in contact, then you can say, you know, hey, I don't like that habit. I'm going to stop that habit, and there's nothing you can do about it. That's not conducive to, you know, me making friends or, you know, there's just something.
My habit of farting loudly in public is really not helping me make friends.
I've never had a problem with that.
You know, it's a silly example.
No, I love farting in public.
Oh, okay. Why? You blame my cat every time you're here.
That's because it's funny. He's just not sure if it's him or not.
Damn you. You know what,
no, the only problem I have with farting in public is the people who do it in elevators and then leave. Leaving it to wait for the next person to come in. You walk in, the door closes, you take your first breath, gag. No. No, not funny. There's times and there's places, but
only your voice.
But no, I mean, you, where else do you really learn that kind of self-awareness and self-control? By focusing on a candle flame, your mind will wander, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. I mean, the 5-minute candle meditation where you just let your mind roll over the course of the events of the day. You sit and you reflect. Mm-hmm. Every moment of that is you're learning more about yourself. Why did I react that way to that stimulus? You know, why do I have a problem with that kind of attitude? Why do I have a real hankering for cheese right now?
You know, and strangely, that is kind of a summation of why I started this podcast and why it focuses in the places it does, which is the dark side, the reflective side, that taking the time to slow down, to stop, evaluate, so that you can make the change in the active side of things. But you really have to take the time for those places that our society says isn't important. Because our society doesn't, as a general rule. It's go, 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 get things done. It's not about taking time. It's not about
reflecting. Our society is designed to cause chaos, stress, and ultimately death. The very food that they provide us in most of the grocery stores is poisonous. I mean, if not directly, it's the chemicals they put in it. I mean, the cheese and Kraft dinner will give you ADD. That's scientifically proven that it destroys your attention span. The red dyes, oh goodness. You know, I mean.
Yeah, but that's just I wanted to tie that in there because the thought came to me. That is why I started to help people who don't necessarily think about that or haven't had that come out for them yet or don't have experience in how to do it. That's what this podcast is for, is to try and open that window for people and to encourage you to take the time to slow down, to reflect on dreams, reflect on your day, to think about you, to go inwards.
Yeah.
And use that. Not just go, I looked at it, I'm done, but to actively do it.
And it does have to be a constant thing, not necessarily a continuous thing. But it, like yoga, like magic, or whatever tradition you're doing, if you're looking for spiritual attainment, it's not a weekend thing. It is in every aspect of your life kind of thing.
It is life.
And if you're going to have any success at it, you have to incorporate it into your life.
Yeah.
Regulate your breathing while you're walking up and down the street. Contemplate what you're doing while you're standing at the stoplight picking your nose. You know, realize, be aware, observe your surroundings. I mean, the more you pay attention to yourself and those things around you.
Observe yourself in the surroundings.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because we are a part of this.
Mm-hmm.
And are we being conducive? Are we collaborators in this society? Because the society is not here to help us. We have to help ourselves. And the best thing you can do to that is to know thyself. Yoga will definitely help you with that.
That seems like the perfect concluding moment.
Good.
That and my computer slowly dying.
Oh.
Is there anything actually?
On that note, we're going to tie it all up.
Well, actually, is there anything else that you wanted to mention about the yoga? I know this is very short for you and that you could go on probably for days, but in the overview, short view kind of, well, not short view, but...
Well, it's only in repeating yourself that you actually... that's what I forgot to mention.
Oh.
So
see? There is something.
I don't know. Yoga's not a game for the weak of heart. And no, your asanas don't have to be painful for you to gain things from it. Lotus was something that I chose to continue practicing specifically because it was a challenge for me. Because my legs are not designed for the lotus position. So to be able to do that is more painful for me than, and probably for you, than it would be for somebody who weighs 110 pounds while they're 6 feet tall.
Damn that.
I mean, yeah.
Hey, Child's pose, which people say is supposed to be the most comfortable position ever, isn't, in my opinion. In my body, child's pose is okay. It is not a happy, relaxing place.
Yeah. No, if I was going to recommend a good stance to learn your sense of control is stand with your feet exactly together, put your arms out at your sides, exactly 90 degrees from your body, and...
Summon great big teeth.
And determine to stay there longer and longer each time. When you get good at that, close your eyes. When you get good at that, stand up on your toes.
You get
better and better. But yeah. Hey, you have your arms out at your sides or above your head. Stand up on your toes and close your eyes. And
to fall over.
You're gonna probably fall over the first couple of times. Have some cushions laying around you or a nice soft whatever grass.
Nothing hard nearby.
But eventually, you get a really good sense of balance.
Mm.
Really good sense of balance.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, between that and dance, I don't know what else can really. I mean, you get the grace of motion, mm-hmm. and that's a really good start.
Awesome.
Yes, I could go on forever and ever. don't do California yoga, people. It's a drug. Bad drug. It's addictive. You don't even know why because there's no benefit in it.
Well, thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you, Tyson, for allowing me to co-opt your time while you're visiting. Hey, I figured it was good. You know, we're out here, you're having a smoke, so the little microphone in front of you and go, yoga, tell me a little bit about yoga.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm so easy.
I won't tell Holly. on that note.
My microphone's slut.
Oh, no. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for being on the
pleasure.
Show and sharing. You're just a wonderful fount of information.
Well, I hope it was at least moderately coherent.
It was for me, which is a good sign. Made
sorry
sense to, me.
Sorry to all you that it wasn't.
Aw.
Try it. It'll all make sense.
Yes. All right. Thanks, Tyson.
Yeah.
Episode 13 of Pennies in the Well is brought to you by the Tarot Card, the Queen of Spears, or Wands if you prefer, and the Runestone, Ingvar.
I'm Oriah the Sphinx from Media Astra Actera, a podcast for witches, magicians, and others of the occult persuasion. Join me for a thought-provoking blend of magic, witchcraft, and natural science as we explore worlds both inner and outer, above and below. You can find the show on iTunes or at sphinx.libsyn.com. And I hope you'll join me in standing Media Astra Actera.
You're exploring the depths of the well with Saturn on Pennies in the Well. As soon as you're done splashing around, climb out of that well and come join me, Firelight, at Inciting a Riot, the podcast. We'll be inciting all sorts of riots in areas such as religion, mainstream news, and living a modern, magical middle-class life. You can find the riot at incitingariot.com or through iTunes. But for now, get back to Saturn and her astoundingly deep show, Pennies in the Well, and... maybe later. Could you explain some of those big words to me?
Ah, if you'd like a big word, anti-disestablishmentarianismist. That's a big word. Yeah, I know. I think I've used all of my well over, 20-letter words today. I used to have a sentence that put them all together in one sentence. It was downright crazy. I used to think German was the only way to get really big words, but apparently not. So those were the promos for, well, there was a promo for Media Astra Actera with Oriah the Sphinx, a lovely and amazing podcast and podcaster. Her podcast comes out once a month, I think on the 23rd of every month. She's very good about being quite regimented about that and being on time. Yay for on time. And then, of course, that was a little bumper that Firelight from Inciting a Riot did for me. Just too entertaining. So I hope you enjoyed the interview with Tyson. and all about yoga, and I'd love to hear your comments. Feel free to email me, penniesinthewell@gmail.com, or leave a comment on the website. And I'd be curious to hear what your experiences with yoga have been, if you've been a California practitioner, most like I have for most of my time, or if you take a deeper aspect of the yoga into your practice, and do you make it a part of your spiritual practice? And if you do, are you the hermetic kind of thalamic base, the same as Tyson is, or have you made it part of your Wiccan practice in a much more direct way than, say, I have, where I just use it as part of my morning physical routine? So I'd love to hear your comments on that. And now we're going to move on to the Body Divine segment, and we're going to be talking about chakras, in particular the root chakra. Now, for those who are going, and I doubt there's many of you, but if you don't happen to know what I'm talking about when I say chakra, chakras are generally considered to be energy centers within the body, that and they can be described as the place where spiritual energy enters into the physical and astral bodies of ourselves. There are different systems of chakras. Typically, I work with the seven chakra system. It's the most common one that you will see represented. It's not the only one. There are systems that only have four chakras, or there are other ones that place other energy centers in the body, such as in the hands and feet. So there's a variety of thought and theory and experience on chakras. Again, I work with the seven chakra system, so that's what I'm familiar with. And quick overview, that means you have your root chakra, your root, navel, solar plexus, heart, throat, third eye, crown. So, excuse me, those would be the seven chakras. And today, talking quickly about the root chakra, these are going to be short segments, believe it or not. I'm going to read you a little bit from The Body Sacred by Diane Sylvan. Diane is spelled D-I-A-N-N-E, Sylvan, S-Y-L-V-A-N. She's also got a great website. I'll put it into the show notes. I've had some fun looking through it. Fantastic author from the two books of hers that I've read. One was The Body Sacred, the other one was The Circle Within, which I may talk about on another day. But I have loved these books, so I do recommend them. And here's a brief intro segment that she wrote about the root chakra, and quite honestly, she did it so well. I'm not even going to try and paraphrase, I'm just going to read. So, the root chakra, and she also labeled that as survival. The root chakra is located at the base of the spine, and it is the foundation upon which the entire column rests. The root governs physical existence and survival. It is the chakra of earth, manifestation of health, and material needs. The root is a very dense and solid chakra, and its desires are difficult, if not impossible, to ignore. So very strongly related to the body. We cannot progress up the column until our physical needs are met. The root is the chakra of grounding. It maintains our deep instinctive connection to the earth and to the whole of nature. It is connected also to sexuality, or rather, to procreation. All our animal instincts are a part of the root, from the fight-or-flight response to the eat-mate-kill impulse. The root also governs our body image and how we perceive our physical selves. If that image is distorted, the energy of the root can become cloudy, and our self-nurturing behavior, what we eat, how we treat ourselves, suffers. The sense of self-worth, of being worthy of material success and abundance, is deeply bound in the root chakra. Isn't that fascinating? I really love her take on the root chakra. So some other associations with the root chakra. It is, typically shown as being bright red. It's located, as she said, at the base of the spine, so between the genitals and the anus. Its element is earth. Its symbol is the four-petaled lotus. And a lot of what it does is, as Diane mentioned, it links us with the physical world. I think she said it a little differently. And it serves as a foundation for us, how we are, how we evolve, the basis of our personality. It helps us to embrace, or it's through the which we embrace things like energy, self-expression, ambition, our desire for security and the survival of ourselves and of our species is also closely tied into our root chakra. So it really is the base of things. And if you don't have a strong base, how are you going to build up the rest of yourself? It kind of reminds me of is it Maslow's hierarchy of needs, that first you have to have that physical basis. You have to have your place to sleep. You have to have food. You know, things like spiritual development are highest on that hierarchy. When everything else is set up and arranged, then you can deal with that. Well, the same kind of applies to chakras in that sense, that we can't just ignore our root chakra because it has to do with the physical and poo-poo. Yeah, poo-poo. We don't poo-poo, which is kind of funny if you think about it in the wrong way. Our root chakra, it's very much a part of who we are and also needs to be integrated, worked on, accepted. As Diane was suggesting, there's a lot of body issue that comes through in the root chakra and can register as the root chakra can register as cloudy and dark and murky if, as an example, or not even an example, but as evidence of issues in that area. So that, in a very brief nutshell, is the root chakra. I hope you enjoy working on it. You probably, as with any chakra, you don't want to have too much energy in it compared to the other ones, because it will unbalance you and unsettle you and perhaps cause you difficulties that you don't want to experience. So this is the wrapping up conclusion of episode 13 of Pennies in the Well. Thank you so much for downloading this show. Thank you for listening all the way to the end. I hope that you have enjoyed the show. And we are going to head out of it with another Michelle Mays song, also off the same album of Fire Leap. And it is called Gently Johnny because, well, we're talking yoga, we're talking body, and really, what could be a better body song than Gently Johnny? I hope you enjoy. I look forward to sharing with you again. I look forward to hearing from you as well. And in the meantime, blessings of the deep and wild upon you. Mary Part. Would you like to try?